There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this gets pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What is up, Bison fans? This is likely going to be a Victory Tuesday edition of the Bison Report radio podcast. I am your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of the Bison Report on 24/7. And if you haven't been living under a rock, you understand that College Game Day was in Brookings and that the Bison brought home that rock. We're going to dive in real quick to the news, and then I'm going to bring Trevor on, and we're going to break down our weekend and break down what happened in Brookings from a football perspective as well. Josh Hayes was named the Missouri Valley Football Conference's Player of the Week. Josh had a critical interception in the game and was honestly just excellent throughout. I believe that Hayes was credited with 6 tackles and an additional pass breakup outside of his interception. But that was his first career pick. If you guys notice, I put out a video of my interview with Josh on BRTV of him describing what he needed to do to get his first career interception. And then obviously spliced in the video of him actually getting his first career interception. Obviously, we're not going to take any credit for that at BRTV, but it is really cool. Certainly that we had that conversation with Josh before that happened. And we want to obviously send our congratulations to Josh, who was nice enough to be on the podcast, not only for his first career pick, not only for bringing home the rock, but for bringing home Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Week honors. Definitely something to put up on the mantle there. Youngstown State, just a general reminder for you Bison fans, is going to be a night game again. I think a lot of you we'll remember the 2017 game, which was another night contest, but that was kind of a knockdown, drag them out overtime. I believe it was a top 10 matchup. It was a victory. I remember a big time blitz by Jabril Cox. I remember, I'm pretty sure I remember a missed field goal. That was quite the game, if I don't remember incorrectly. And you know, Youngstown, Ohio, it's dark, it's relatively cold. Obviously, the game's going to be in early November, so something to pay attention to as the week goes on, and also something, you know, just plan your Saturday accordingly. When you wake up and get rolling, don't expect a Bison game to come on your TV at 2 o'clock, because it's not happening. It's coming on at 5. Finally, I just want to let everyone know, if you were looking for the film review piece and some of our other stuff, everything's been kind of pushed back a day. Don't worry. We have some excellent content out for you today. We have a couple of press conference recaps by our intern, Micah. We've got another excellent non-conference basketball capsule. This one is Marquette. That's a massive game on Christmas weekend, especially for Tyree Edie and Jackson Notek, the two Wisconsin Bison. That's a big one. And obviously, you're listening to this show, and also the film review piece will be up on a Tuesday. Everything got pushed back. It was covering Chiefs Packers in Kansas City. As many of you know, I own Packer Report, or published Packer Report as well. So just kind of got to Brookings and kept on heading south, but I'm back in the motherland today. Right now, I'm going to bring on, though, my co-host and my lead football analyst, somebody that I hadn't seen in a good 6 months, but was really excited to see Trev and his family this weekend. Trev, how you doing, buddy? Safe travels, kind of catching up on some rest?
Yeah, traveling back was probably a lot better than actually getting there. Our daughter Everly was a lot easier to handle. Coming off a Dakota marker victory always helps things out, so I'm elated there. The 3:45 a.m. alarms on Saturday and Sunday are catching up to me, though, so got a couple of days rest here that need to get caught up on the old sleep, but nonetheless happy that there was a W and we got to come up and see a lot of faces we haven't seen in a while, and just overall a really fun experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had a blast. You and I met up real early on Saturday morning, and you know, before we had honestly had time for the coffee to kick in, had kind of I don't know. I mean, we fanboyed out a little bit because we ended up bumping into Reese Davis, who wished us a good morning. We saw Herbie. You had an experience with Pat McAfee. If you run into Trevor at the tailgate, you know, maybe he'll tell you that story, but we're not going to get into that right now. But you know, we saw Pat, we saw Reese, we saw Herbie kind of in the backstage area as we were trying to stay warm. And then, Trevor and I were, you know, obviously fortunate enough, if you guys saw BRTV post game, to get some awesome video, some awesome photos from the game day set. And it was a really cool layout for what they were given. Obviously, you know, there's a big difference between a field of grass in the middle of South Dakota State's campus and downtown Broadway in Fargo with 10,000 people. I mean, there are inherent advantages that Fargo had, but I thought overall, Brookings did a good job. And I think McAfee kind of brought a lot of the juice as well. I think that, you know, he's got a national brand for the brand right now, and his inclusion and his entrance and things like that kind of brought everything to the next level. And also I think that not being just a gimme and having a little contention on the final pick, the headgear pick, and Corso putting on the Bison head in front of that many South Dakota State fans really kind of set the tone for the day. And I thought that game day was awesome. It wasn't quite, you know, what it's like in Fargo, but you know, these college game day people, and Lee Fitting said it on Bison 1660, Fargo is an anomaly. You know, they don't have as good of a setup or as good of a time when they go almost anywhere as they do in Fargo, just because Broadway is set up so unbelievably well for that. You know, Bison fans obviously show up in droves and they have a fantastic time doing that. This was great. Something that I think, and Trev, you can kind of expand on this now, but something that I think you and I will remember for a long time.
Yeah, I think this is, you know, a memory that you really can't put a thumbprint on it or words, just simply because you never foresaw something like this coming, especially when both teams made the jump. And even going back to my childhood, which I talked about in my, you know, midweek thoughts last week, and touch on it this week too, it's just pretty cool to see when you look back 15 years ago from that point just to this point. There's a lot that has transpired in between there, most certainly, for both universities to even make that possible. And it starts with both of them making the jump. And you got this trophy that's just kind of made up, kind of a fictitious rally cry, and it turns into something Pat McAfee gets hyped about. Now, granted, he's not on the side of the green and gold, but something like that, when you are the center of the college football world, despite being a lower-level division, just kind of proves that if you can play, people will find you. And, you know, I think a lot of the experiences that we had, a lot of the experiences the fans had, despite it not being in Fargo, you know, we were fortunate enough to have that twice, obviously, but we know dang well why they came to Brookings. And for them to be able to feature the Bison and FCS football really overall, that's always good for that brand. So I was excited, felt very fortunate and grateful that we got to make this trip, just because, you know, before the season started, you look at the schedule, obviously knew they were going to Brookings this year, but anytime I miss that game, it breaks my heart. I've only missed two of them since the first one I attended in 07, but just being able to go to that game on top of having game day, on top of having a bunch of friends come down, college buddies, roommates, old teammates, and then having all my family there that's local, you know, it was pretty cool because they got to meet my daughter Everly. She got to go to her first game, and Carl and I got to experience that side of it from a different angle, and then obviously getting to see yourself and take that in with some friends. So you don't get that every day, and there's a lot of people that are in the media and that cover things for a long, long time and don't get those type of personal experiences. So very grateful, very happy, very excited that we were able to do that. And, you know, I really don't think the feelings of it will hit me until later, just being this fresh off it. So just very, very grateful and very excited that that was able to happen.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we had a fantastic time together, and it was cool to have the debut of Trevor Gebhardt on BRTV postgame. That's something that is new this season, and so hopefully something, not something necessarily we've gotten a ton of feedback on yet, but hopefully something that you fans are enjoying. And let us know. Let us know if there's something we could do a little different, something we could do a little better. That's one thing, and usually when we trot out something new, we get a lot of feedback, but that's one thing I haven't heard a ton about is BRTV postgame. And it might just be honestly that it gets published at 9:30 or, you know, sometimes 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. That also isn't necessarily all that helpful for having it be seen right away. So I definitely understand that. All right, Trev, let's dive into the game. Let's break it down. Early on, though, a field goal fest a little bit. One, you know, miss by North Dakota State. One miss then, of course, by South Dakota State at the end of the half. But what was the feeling that you got in that first half where everybody was just kind of kicking field goals? Did it seem like South Dakota State was kind of throwing their biggest punches, or did it seem like two fighters just sort of jabbing and feeling each other out for the first 30 minutes?
Well, I thought South Dakota State came out hot. I mean, obviously their juices are flying high. I haven't seen their adrenaline like that since the playoffs. Was it 2016? They started off up 10-0. It was almost as if they thought they could win the game in the first quarter. And the fact that they got those two field goals right away was a huge win for NDSU. I thought that was a very encouraging sign. Despite the fact NDSU looked a little tight, they looked out of sorts. It was almost as if they almost approached the beginning of the game trying not to lose. And anytime you have a big rival, that type of environment and atmosphere, you cannot play tight. You just got to cut it loose and go do what you do. And, you know, I think the pressure of the win streak might have a factor into it. You know, I don't feel like it's talked about as much as it was back in my day, but that still kind of weighs on you. And over time, that sword can break if you get caught on the wrong day. And Saturday certainly could have been that, not necessarily because it was NDSU not being good enough. It was just simply because they just weren't ready and fortunate enough to where they could escape a couple of those drives with two field goals, and then Vinatieri with the miss right before half. So not a lot of action early. NDSU beat themselves with the pass interference. I believe it was Ellison, which killed that drive. You know, I thought overall, and SDSU came out hot. They looked a little bit more loose, a little bit more excited. NDSU looked tight, but neither team being able to finish drives is a sign of two quality football teams. You know, I felt like both kind of shot themselves in the foot early on with certain instances. But anytime you have a bunch of field goals that early on is a sign of quality defenses, quality coaching, and just a little bit of playing tight by both squads.
Let's talk a little bit about the Jabari Gibbs injury. I want to just put something out there and be extremely clear about it, and that is I've watched the tackle 6-7 times, Aaron Mercadal did absolutely nothing dirty, like whatsoever. That was as clean of a tackle as you'll find. I mean, it was borderline shoestring. That was absolutely a stuff happens type of injury, and there was nothing else Merck could have done. So I just wanted to put that out there right away in case there were any questions on that. That was just an unfortunate thing. To me, it looked like a foot or an ankle. Some folks were saying it was a knee. I'm not sure if any of the South Dakota folks, Matt Zimmer or whoever, have had a chance to get a solid answer on that. But do you feel like South Dakota State made significant game plan changes when they did bring in Kaden Nelson? Or did you kind of feel like that quarterback run, the heavy run, was going to be the way they wanted to beat North Dakota State either way?
Yeah, I don't think it was a huge adjustment by South Dakota State. I didn't necessarily think it would be either, knowing the individual that was going to be taking snaps. He's a South Dakota product out of Mitchell. I remember watching him in high school quite a bit. His team made a state championship or two, and he was very much a running quarterback then. So, you know, Kaden Nelson, I don't think he's a Division One run first quarterback. I don't think he's a bad player by any means. It's not what I'm getting at, but I don't think he's unathletic to the point where you have to shift from your extremely athletic starting quarterback either. So, I mean, he's got decent speed, and he's pretty athletic himself. Now, are you going to run him as much as Jabari Gibbs? Probably not. But I think if you have a certain game plan for your starter and he's getting some of those reps all week, you know, he's probably more prepared for that than what a spectator would think naturally with your starting quarterback coming out. And I thought he did an okay job. They definitely didn't start chunking it around a bunch. You know, I think total SDSU had 17 pass attempts total, if I remember correctly. So it wasn't like they thought that they were going to chuck it around a bunch. I thought it was somewhat of a balanced attack. Kate Johnson was a huge part of that game plan, and obviously Pierre Strong. So Kaden Nelson's job became what Jabari Gibbs' job was originally, like we talked about, and that was to get those two playmakers the ball. So I don't know if he got hurt or if they didn't think he was getting the job done, because the kid that scored the tying touchdown at 16 was that Hyde, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but I thought he had a phenomenal fake. And, you know, you got your third string, somewhat of a fourth string-ish quarterback in there in a Dakota Marker heated battle, and he's making a quality fake, a nice read, got Tuscott overcommit and scored. So that right there tells me they kind of had a game plan, and they were going to stick to it.
Yeah, that was Arizona State transfer Kurt Walding was in competition with Jabari Gibbs, and he actually technically, I guess, was the number one quarterback on their depth chart, but decided to leave. I think he might have ended up at Nebraska potentially. I'm not really sure what all ended up happening there, but you're right. I mean, the Keaton Heidi kid's a true freshman, for better or worse, honestly, was their fourth option heading into the offseason, or heading into, you know, fall camp, summer, and not a guy I don't think that they wanted the ball in his hands with the Dakota Marker game on the line. And I don't know. And that was a question I guess we have to answer as well, is I don't know if Kaden Nelson was hurt or benched, ran the ball for 3 yards a carry, and was 2 for 9 passing for 13 yards. So we might have just answered our own question there. That's pretty darn brutal when you are well under 1.5 yards an attempt. You don't, yeah, and he took a sack. That's rough. So I can understand why they went to Keaton Heidi. I guess I do understand that for sure. And Pierre Strong, though, 6.3 a carry. Mikey Daniel was up around 10. Cade Johnson had a 16-yard run. Overall, South Dakota State was able to rush for better than 5 yards a carry. What did you notice that was kind of going wrong in the front seven? I didn't think the defensive line had a particularly good day. I saw a lot of outside zone with cutback lanes that were open. What was South Dakota State doing well? What was Pierre Strong doing well? What can you kind of tell us about why South Dakota State, despite, you know, NDSU, for better or for worse, kind of knowing they were going to run it, still being able to run it?
Yeah, I think, well, Pierre Strong, he's a solid runner, very athletic, runs downhill, and knows how to find a gap and hit the hole. And I think when you have that that high quality of an athlete and running back, I think if you get, you know, somewhat of an open lane or just a decent push up front, you don't need to have, I mean, you don't need to have a hole that you can drive a truck through to make that kid go. So I think they just kind of stuck with what has worked for them. They came into this game averaging 6.1 or 6.2 yards a carry. And you look at Pierre Strong's average, like you just mentioned, he rushed for 6.3 yards a carry. So they were right on course with where they've been at all year. Mikey Daniel had a nice 23-yard run at one point. And I think they were just finding unique ways to get the guys that they know that can churn yards the ball. I didn't think they did anything drastically different than what they've done all year. They were getting to their zones, and they were getting a decent push. And it wasn't until really late in the game that you saw Code Green in the front seven start to get some pressure on the quarterback right away. Felt like they had far too much time. And I think the tone was set early on that first Jabari Gibbs run where he got something like 8 yards. I think it was a zone read. Made a right play, got an angle, and got a few yards. I think broke a tackle too. But nothing crazy, just played better football at times, really, to make it as simple as possible. So, I mean, there's certainly things that NDSU can get better at, going back and looking at the tape. But you're playing a high-quality opponent, and they're going to win some too. And Pierre Strong rushed for 123 yards or something like that on 19 attempts. Kanan Nelson running for another 40. So they've got guys that can run the football, and they were trying to beat NDSU at what they typically beat people at. So I think you're going to see SDSU continue that, because if they can do it against a defense like Code Green and how well this defense has played all year, you're probably going to see this more often the back half of Valley play from the Jackrabbits.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, you know, I want people to understand that is just the fact that, you know, the other kids are on scholarship too. The other coaches get paid. North Dakota State's not going to win every game by 25. It's just not going to happen. They're not going to have 600 yards of offense every game either. You know, a lot of complaining about play calling. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You can pretty easily identify the dumbest fans by the first ones that complain about play calling, because it's just the absolutely lowest common denominator complaint. You know, you wouldn't complain about the play call if it worked. You know, you're just saying it's a bad play call because it didn't work. It's results-based analysis, and it's trash. So that's my thought on play calling, guy. I have absolutely no time for it. Frankly, the last three play callers for North Dakota State have been absolutely phenomenal, and that's just a basic thing that a fan, you know, immediately goes to is, oh, the play calling was bad. I mean, you know, you have South Dakota State, who I would probably guess from a talent perspective has a top 5, 6, 8 defense in the country. And you rolled up 394 total yards, 330 of those on the ground. I don't think there needs to be any complaints about that, but there certainly were. And unfortunately, with the spoiled status of this fan base, you know, there will be probably moving forward. If I were to have one complaint or strategic suggestion that absolutely will not be taken because nobody cares what I think, and said it after the game that eventually they did start to filter in a little bit more of their single high stuff and drop Michael Tutsi and James Hendricks one or the other down into the box for kind of that eighth defender. And I thought that was a little late, just for my taste. I would have done that a little earlier in the game. It was clear that they were going to try and stretch NDSU horizontally in the run game. And I was not of the opinion that Kane and Nelson or Keaton Heidi were going to be able to jack the ball down the field. You know, whatever you think of Cade Johnson, and if that was really the reason they wanted to stay too high was to bottle up Cade, I understand, but I just would have gone to some of that eight in the box stuff a little bit earlier and try to force the young quarterbacks to beat me. That's just, you know, what I would have done in my opinion, but, you know, a win is a win. And I think you will definitely take that point total against, you know, every day of the week. If you at North Dakota State are going to hold your opponent to 16 points, you're going to win every game. You know, there's not anyone in the country that's going to keep the Bison under 17. I really don't think. I don't think, especially with a guy like Ty Brooks, and he's somebody I want to talk about now because I can't think of an offensive player that has had more fun in an opposing stadium than Ty Brooks. He was absolutely electric in the loss in 2017. And then today was really, really good again. 10.8 a carry on the ground with that 59-yard touchdown run. You know, caught the wheel route from Easton Stick in 2017. Brooks has to absolutely love playing in Dana J. Dykhouse Stadium, especially as a North Dakota native going down to South Dakota and getting it done. Trey Lance, I think, I'm not breaking any ground here by saying this was probably his worst day as a Bison. 7 for 14, 62 yards, still didn't turn the ball over. But, you know, you're talking about 62 yards, you're talking about less than 5 yards an attempt. And that's pretty pedestrian, 4.2 yards a carry. That's relatively pedestrian as well. I think if you showed me this stat line, and told me that this was going to be, you know, his worst game of the year, I would tell you that he's having a pretty fantastic year. But thought he short-armed a couple of them, especially, you know, I think he got a little goofed up because he threw one into the wind that didn't quite get there. And then going downwind, I think he took a little bit off of it. And then, you know, it got calm and still feel like he missed a couple of throws. They had a really nice wheel to Dimitri Williams dialed up that he missed. They had Phoenix probably he was double covered, but he was behind both guys. And I think if that's 4 yards deep in the end zone instead of one, that's probably a touchdown. What did you see from Trevor, that was maybe kind of the impetus for some of his struggles, or was South Dakota State just that good?
It definitely wasn't number five's finest hour, which is okay. You're going to have those games. You're not going to play perfect every single game.
And it's a lot more fun to learn from a win.
Exactly. And I was going to get to that point because you're a young kid. You're in your first year starting. You really haven't been tested. Now, he's had a few moments this season where you could take and say, hey, this is a great learning opportunity. I'm sure Coach Hedberg has been all over that because he's a phenomenal coach and a phenomenal man. But there needed to be a game where Trey Lance was not Trey Lance, I think, for his long-term development. And I've kind of been waiting on it, and I'm actually kind of excited it happened because in order for a quarterback to become who they have become, a.k.a. Steve Walker, a.k.a. Brock Jensen, a.k.a. Carson Wentz, a.k.a. Easton Stick, I think all of those, when you look back on their career, I think it turned out okay. And we're certainly on that path with Trey Lance, and at times you're going to deviate from it. And I think Saturday you chalk it up a little bit to preparation, a little bit to nerves, and I'd say 50% of it was SDSU said, Trey Lance, you will not beat us today. Somebody else is going to have to. And you know what? If I'm in that coaching staff, on that coaching staff, I'd have been doing the same thing. because number five is NDSU's best player, in my opinion. He touches the ball every play. And he is the number one person that if you stop and if you get him off schedule, he controls the rest. So if you get him out of his element and out of his game, you give yourself a shot. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Clearly, we saw that with NDSU winning the game at the end of the day and Coach Green stepping up in a big way by only allowing three and not seven. But if you do that and you stop somebody's best player, you at least give yourself a better chance percentage-wise. And I don't think there's many teams in the country that can do that. I think SDSU and James Madison are it. But kudos to SDSU for getting after a young kid and giving him a learning opportunity. But the fact that he can walk away from Brookings with a rock and a W and a great chance to learn from it for his long-term development, don't think there's anything to complain about. So hopefully number five is in the film room, and I'm sure he is. And they're still 8-0. So that's what matters the most, and you move on to next week and just try to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're obviously moving on to, you know, what certainly looks like a lighter part of their schedule moving forward. You always have concern about trap games and games against quote-unquote lesser opponents kind of coming up and biting you, but the Bison are kind of through the beef of their schedule so far. And as you mentioned, 8-0, just absolutely incredible. Speaking of incredible, the play of the South Dakota defensive ends, Derek Tuska, Spencer Wagey, combined for three sacks and a one forced fumble. Turns out on replay, should have been two forced fumbles because Derek Tuska definitely took the ball away from the South Dakota State quarterback, but ended up not mattering. So we're not going to dive into the officiating. I don't think any good can come from that. But what's that like? You know, you're a South Dakota kid. I've spoken to both those guys. Spencer certainly seems like he feels like he was under-recruited by South Dakota State. Says what most of the South Dakota guys that end up at NDSU say anyway, you know, that he would have made, you know, he would have ended up at NDSU because that's where he wanted to play ball. And, you know, I think Tuska was probably coming here forever just because Jared also played here. But what does it feel like as a South Dakota player, a South Dakota high school player, to make a play wearing green and gold at South Dakota State?
It's very satisfying. And I think that's I'm speaking from my personal experience, but I think it's because, like you had just mentioned, there's a lot of kids that get recruited by South Dakota State and North Dakota State. And if you're from South Dakota and you have an offer from North Dakota State, you just kind of naturally think that that option is going to kind of happen. Not necessarily fall in your lap, but they're in the same conference. They're a big rival. NDSU's been your big brother, and that's a fact. And you don't offer a kid that has been offered by North Dakota State. And every team has different needs. You know, there might be a situation where Derek was obviously going to go where Jared was, like you said, but there's other scenarios where how do you not offer Spencer Wagey, Preston Evans, Mike Hardy? You know, there, I could go on and on. There's a ton of examples. Coulter Boyer. That happens far too often. And I think when kids have an opportunity to go play at a football factory like North Dakota State, play in an environment like the Fargo Dome, and be around the best fans in the world, kids are going to jump at that opportunity. And there's nothing that that program has done in the last two decades to even equal that effort. And when you get the opportunity to play them and make a play, and it happens, especially in a big time moment, it's very, very satisfying. It justifies why you went where you did. It helps kind of silence what anybody might say back at home, because a lot of people there even naturally assume that you're going to go to school there just because you're from there. I think you see the same thing with some Minnesota kids. And it just baffles me, but I'm very thankful because I've fortunately gotten to benefit from it. And I'm continuing to watch kids benefit from it and seeing them have the same experience as I've had, and being able to beat your rival on top of it, it's just fun. And, you know, whether it's, you know, a chip on your shoulder or bitterness, whatever. I mean, you know, that stuff comes and goes, but I think it's just satisfying because it's almost saying, hey, I was good enough and I want you to see that. So I'm very happy for those kids from South Dakota. Very, very happy just because I know what they're thinking and feeling, and it's just cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to feel great for those kids, especially the ones that do feel under-recruited and kind of disrespected by their home state school. I can understand why that would, you know, not be something that feels real good for sure. Something else that probably didn't feel great was Demetri Williams getting drilled in the chest by the cornerback on that halfback pass. Matt Entz said in his press conference today that if you watch the film, the intended receiver was open. Demetri just didn't have a chance to get anything behind, you know, behind it. It was something that they had repped. It was something that, you know, Coach Entz had given his blessing as far as the play call, but could not have backfired more spectacularly as the cornerback hits Williams, who instead of eating it and allowing his defense to punt to a third string quarterback, throws it as he's getting hit. The ball pops up in the air, and South Dakota State comes down with it. You kind of struggled with that, Trevor, just because it was a player that was put in a position that he hadn't been in before in kind of a big spot.
Yeah, we talked about this right after, and I even live, we were saying how we didn't know if the guy was open. We had asked a few people. I'm glad that you got clarity on that because I haven't seen the clip. But Demetri, he's just trying to make a play. And he's just trying to help his team out. Made a poor choice, absolutely, no doubt about it. But the poor kid is, I haven't seen him throw a football in a game. If he did in high school or if he was a quarterback at some point, somebody please let me know. But the kid is in a situation that he's never seen or never been in a massive environment. I don't know if it was a corner blitz. I don't know exactly what happened to where whoever hit him was able to get that free, but he's trying to make a play, trying to help his team out, and just made the wrong decision at the wrong time. But then again, you've got to put your players in position to where they can succeed, and it was just kind of a bad storm all at once. Thankfully, it didn't hurt them because of what transpired afterwards. But if they're in that scenario again, I think Demetri Williams will make the right call. So I actually hope that they do that again at some point this season, so Demetri can get some redemption.
Yeah, because, I mean, if it was open, that was a heck of a play design. I liked the play design where you don't pitch it on the fullback or the halfback pass. You hand it to him, and they just didn't get a big enough piece of the corner, you know, in blocking to – he had the guy in his lap before – it was time to fire. And honestly, that is why that play is usually a pitch, but then you don't fool the cornerback in the same way. Just one of those things where you're a split second from a touchdown and ends up being a turnover. And that's kind of football. But man, I had to shake his hand after the game. I just cannot been that excited for a kid. It just became a dad. Have been looking for that first career pick. We talked about it during the week, talked about emphasis on attacking the football instead of just batting it down. And what a time for Josh Hayes' first career interception. Yeah, I'll admit, and so will he, that it was pretty much thrown right to him. But I got to say, that was a big time player making a big time play in a big spot.
Yeah, I remember after he made the pick, you were all giddy and jumping up and down. And that's his first pick. That's his first pick. And then, of course, you want to talk about the interview. And good for him. Clearly, he's had a lot of good things happen for him lately. So happy for Josh. Just seems like a genuine down-to-earth kid. I didn't get a chance to speak to him after the game, and I know you wanted to congratulate him from interviewing him earlier that week. So having that type of play and that type of game will give him confidence moving forward and into the playoffs because he knows that he can do it. He's more than capable. Sometimes if you haven't made that type of play in a big game, someone might doubt themselves to the point where they don't know if they can, and not having that kind of confidence can hurt. And Josh Hayes stepped up in a massive way, probably at the most critical point to where NDSU could ultimately win following. So kudos to him. Great body control. People don't understand how difficult that is to turn your body while the ball is in the middle of the air and then go up and snag it. So that's just great preparation and an opportunity coming his way. Probably an ill-advised throw, but you know what? He was in the right spot at the right time, and he capitalized on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just huge for the kid, huge for the defense, huge for the team. Completely flipped the script of what was going on there. You know, you would have had Trey Lance down three with the ball in his hand, and I think you feel pretty good about that. You know, maybe getting some Carson Wentz, Darius Shepherd vibes from you and I in homecoming, or you know, Carson Wentz, although he had a lot more time on the clock. Carson Wentz to RJ the several times against Illinois State, but it would have been kind of a cool scenario, you know, to have Trey with the ball with plenty of time, obviously in four down territory, down three in the Dakota marker game. But I think the staff and the program is pretty darn happy that Josh picked that off. And something I think that doesn't get mentioned or should is just how big that false start was to drop them back from third and four to third and nine. I think it almost certainly changed the play call for the conversion. I think it changed the field position as far as, especially after a miss, how much rope they were going to give Vinatieri. I think that play was bigger than maybe people realize. I don't think anybody has a lack of realization of how big the next play that we're going to talk about was, and that is the fourth and one call. I kept saying to you, you know, we were standing there next to each other, basically equal with the line of scrimmage. I said, we both kind of said that there's no way that they are strong enough to stop Schoening and Lance. Lance is, you know, 6'3", 230. If they sneak it, they need an inch. You know, they just need to move the nose of the football across the 30-yard line. They have, you know, a 99% chance of getting a first down with a quarterback sneak. They don't sneak. They don't run power. They run an off-tackle play with actually backup tackle Cody Mauch wearing an eligible number. That was 88, was actually backup tackle Cody Mauch. And they double-team the six tech, completely destroy him. Babich gets a good piece of the outside linebacker, and Lupke clips the corner. Boom. Cofield outruns Backhouse to the crib. You were running down the side. I lost track of you. Describe that moment and kind of the stones that it took to make that call, because I tell you what, if Rosenboom fills the E-gap and, you know, knocks Adam Cofield's block off 2 yards into the backfield after the halfback pass went for an interception, Matt Entz has some explaining to do this week.
Off tackle into the boundary on fourth and maybe an inch, with where you're at, 71-yard run, so that's some quick math. You're on your own 29-yard line, and you go off tackle on the boundary. Clearly the coaches know something we didn't. They liked the call, and kudos to the staff for sticking to it, or if they changed the call, because you have that many guys on a staff who are seasoned coaches, someone's probably going to say something and raise their hand and go, I don't know if that's a good idea, but don't know where exactly I saw it or who said it. They believed in the guys up front, and the guys up front had all the confidence in the world that they could get the job done. And they were right. And the team believed in themselves. The coaches knew what they wanted. And I'm glad they stuck to it. It reminded me of Georgia Southern in 2012 when we had fourth and Frisco on the line, and it seemed like there were 16 timeouts and 4 hours in between the two plays. And every timeout, we had the same call. Every timeout, we kept it on. And we knew exactly what we wanted. We knew exactly what we were going to get. And we knew we were going to score. And I feel like that's what was going through the minds of everyone on that sideline. It definitely wasn't going on in our mind. With Trey Lance in that situation, you're going to get a first down. You're going to get the first down. You're going to have a shot at moving the ball down the field. SDSU used their second time out of the half, which I thought was an atrocious decision by Coach Stiglmeyer. And you have the opportunity to run some clock out because they just used another timeout. And with one timeout and maybe less than a minute to go with a third/fourth-string quarterback that really hasn't completed the ball, you're probably going to win the game, even if you get three out of it. So for me, I would have done the QB sneak all day long, but man, the fact that Ent says, I have some choice words that I want to say that are exciting that I can't, but it was freaking awesome. And I'm so glad that they stuck to their guns. Everybody won their one-on-one matchup at a pivotal moment. You had Josh Hayes capitalize on a big opportunity right before that, and then the offense comes out, has a huge opportunity themselves, and they all capitalize. So they made more plays, the most cliche coach talk ever. They made more plays than the other team at the end of the day. And, man, what a time to have all 11 guys win a battle, because – you go fourth and inches and you house it 71 yards off tackle into the boundary. I've seen it one other time in my life, and it was in 2006. It was my freshman year, high school playoffs. We were playing a team that was much better than us, and our senior, or no, actually he was a junior at the time. He was our captain. He ended up becoming Elite 45 captain in South Dakota. For those of you who know what that is, basically the player of the year for the state. And then became a linebacker at USD. But Tim Marlette, whose younger brother Dan, you're probably familiar with, played at North Dakota State. Tim Marlette, it was fourth and one, and we were tied or barely winning, and he housed it 60-something yards. Same play, off tackle, to the right side into the boundary. And that was one thing that went through my mind after Cofield broke free. 13 years prior to that, so kind of crazy, but I went off to the back behind the bench and started yelling a lot of words that I also cannot repeat on this, just pure excitement, absolutely juiced, elated, and just happy for the guys and happy for the coaches, because I know what kind of heartbreak they felt 2 years before, and with that exact same game being their last loss, it probably felt very satisfying for those that were there in 2017 to get that redemption and to do it in the fashion that they did. So obviously, you know, my history and those that read my midweek thoughts last week and kind of how in depth of how personal this game is, just something I'll never forget, basically how we started this show. So what a fitting way to end the game of a very memorable day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just one of the, like I said, one of the 10 gutsiest calls I've seen live. That off tackle run to the boundary wouldn't have been on my top five ideas. And, you know, that's why they're coaching and why I'm sitting here talking about the game for sure. It was absolutely wild. And I think, you know, honestly, it goes back to, and by the way, I really appreciate you keeping the explicit language tag off of this podcast. I think it's important that we allow the kids to listen. But, you know, it goes back to what I said in the last paragraph of my preview for those of you that had a chance to read it, which was this is a huge game, and it's the kind of massive game that Coach Stig doesn't win. And we found out that it is, at least so far, the kind of game that Matt Entz and his staff does win. And that call, I think, epitomizes kind of the Charlie Brown pulling the football away from Lucy that has happened over and over and over again to Coach Stig and that program that, you know, is probably one of the best five programs in FCS football over the last decade. But, you know, Big Brother just keeps pulling that football away right at the last second. And Trav, I want to, you know, just have you real quick describe, because we're getting kind of close to the end here. But real quick, I want you to describe what we, after that final sack or stopping South Dakota State short on fourth down, we went to kind of position ourselves for the run to the rock. And that's something that, you know, obviously those who don't play and haven't played and those who haven't been on the winning side have never felt. So describe the feeling of as a unit running over and grabbing that heavy trophy.
Celebration. It's just satisfying to know that the efforts that you're putting in are paying off. And, you know, it's not the ultimate goal at the end of the day for where you're trying to get as a team, but knowing that you've accomplished that and beating your rival, that is a goal every year. So knowing that you're one step closer, it's just kind of a symbolic point in time of getting to your next goal. So winning the Missouri Valley does probably require beating South Dakota State most of the time. It doesn't absolutely have to be the case, but when you do that, you know that you put yourself in a really good position. So beating a rival, beating a good quality conference opponent, and then getting one step closer to your goals of winning championships, which is, of course, conference and the national title, which helps being at home in the playoffs. So just kind of a symbolic moment to encapsulate accomplishing your goals.
Absolutely. And I love the tradition of, you know, position groups taking pictures with the rock and friends on the team taking pictures with the rock. And it just really seems to be kind of a family event once that trophy's secured for the next 365 days or so. Thank you, Trev, for your time tonight. And we want to obviously thank you guys, the listeners, especially if you've made it this far with us. We're approaching the 55-minute mark. There's a lot to talk about. It was a big weekend. We hope you guys are pleased and appreciative of the kind of 15 minutes of bonus time here. We like to try and keep the shows around 40 minutes, but it just didn't seem like this week was going to fit into that time slot, even without any interviews. Just too much went on. What an epic game. And I think that is an overused word, and it's something I wrote about in my three quick things, which is free. You can find it on Bison Report. That is an overused word, the word epic, but this was epic. In 20 years, Trevi and I were on the way back to the Swifttail Center, which is where we left Trev's vehicle. And I told him, I said, in 20 years, we're going to talk about that Saturday. And I think that's true. I mean, we will, you reminisce back on the interception and obviously on that fourth and one call in College game day and Corso putting on the Bison head and everything. Just what an unbelievable day to be associated with the program. Guys, if there's anything that you can do to support Trevor and I in this venture, it's certainly to become a VIP member at the Bison Report. You're going to get access to the film review pieces that I do. You're going to get access to everything that Trevor does. You're going to get access to everything that Nate Zastro is going to do this season for basketball. You're going to get the latest hoops and recruiting news. hoops and football recruiting news. It is absolutely worth your time, and I have a fantastic announcement. I've been teasing this for a couple of weeks, but those of you who know what CBS All Access is, it's either a $6.99 a month or a $9.99 a month streaming service from CBS. So if you're a cord cutter, but it has their entire library of shows, live TV, if you don't have a TV provider, but they have some specific shows to CBS All Access. It is actually more expensive than the VIP pass, but is something that is now included as an annual VIP or a monthly VIP subscriber. We are in the process of adding CBS All Access to that package, making it even more of a tremendous value. You always got to be able to see all the other sites. So if you're a Vikings fan, Viking Update. If you're a Packers fan, I'm the publisher of Packer Report. You want to catch up on Chris Kleiman. Hey, I help the guys out at Go Powercat, Badger 24/7, Gopher Illustrated, Inside Carolina. The entire network is yours. And right now, if you subscribe through Bison Report, you're going to get 50% off of an annual VIP pass. That's $4.48 a month for 1 year. $53.70 for the year is what you'll be billed. It's an absolutely phenomenal value that now comes with the streaming service CBS All Access. It is just absolutely incredible, the value that we are providing for you guys. And I promise you, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but if 10 or 12 or 15 of you sign up, it's a massive, massive deal for myself, Trevor, the staff. It's a big, big deal. We want to thank you guys one more time for listening, and go Bison.